Welcome to the New Media Show. This is a one where I am on the road, and we're going to do audio only today. So those of you listening later, you don't care. But if you're joining us live, welcome to the New Media Show. Of course, I want to welcome my co-host, Mr. Rob Greenlee. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Great, Todd. You're on the road again. We're back with the New Media Show. It's exciting. As always, we're just on a little different day this week because you're on the road. And I have to say, you're on a Audio-Technica ATR-21, and you sound absolutely fantastic, Todd.
Well, you dime me out, you know. So this is actually probably the first time I've ever used this mic. So I've had it in my bag, and I was having a little bit of trouble with my Bluetooth headset. I said, well, let's break this bad boy out and see how she does. But anyway, we're here, and I hope everyone else is here too.
Yeah. Well, it's Sunday. We probably didn't pick up everybody. I know, I don't know about Utah, but I normally like to sleep in on Sundays. So I'm sure there's a few others that are probably going to do that too.
I never sleep in. My sleeping in is like an extra 2 hours or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least a couple 2 hours. Yeah. But anyway, the podcasting is still charging forward, and there's definitely stuff going on. Is there anything that comes to your mind?
Well, you know, it just was a busy week for me. I know from a business standpoint, you know, and of course you and I were on Ray Ortega's show earlier this week, and talk a little bit about some of the stuff we talked last week about, you know, some bandwidth challenges some shows are having, and you know, the true cost of the medium. So that was it was nice to be on Ray's show and talk about that for a little bit. And I actually did that show from my car. So, you know, that was fun. But, you know, I've seen some things in the news where a lot of hirings are happening right now. And, you know, one posting that came up that really interested me was the McMillan announcement that they need a senior audio producer. Now, McMillan has been, for those that don't know, McMillan has been behind the Quick and Dirty Tips network. So I'm thinking they're probably going to be hiring someone for maybe some sort of producer for Quick and Dirty Tips. That's what I would assume. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. But, you know, they're based out in New York. So I don't know where they're going to want their person that they're going to be hiring to be out of.
Yeah, I know that the impression that I've gotten is that they're looking to be, you know, a little more aggressive in the market. I think Mignon is focused more on the podcast network now, so they may be looking to build and expand and things like that. I know there's some changes with her priorities, and that was exciting. So this may be a little bit of a reflection of that refocus on the network and building something even bigger than what they have already. So it's always great to hear when people or companies like this are hiring, because that means that there's some expansion plans happening and things are growing, and it's always exciting to see that. But it was an interesting roundtable with the normal roundtablers on the Podcasters Roundtable. You know, talking about podcast hosting and costing is a very complicated subject. I know I felt myself biting my lip many times during that show, because there was just so many areas that you can go into on that topic, that it didn't feel like we actually covered all the areas, but but it was, you know, it was a good show. I mean, if you have an interest in kind of the behind the scenes of what happens in the podcast hosting, costing and what big shows face as far as cost and stuff, it was a good episode to listen to. What do you think, Todd?
It was, and it was kind of ironic, because the next day I had two emails from, and these were someone that had not actually listened to that show. I kind of initially thought it was, because I replied back and said, "Were you listening to the podcast yesterday and the Podcasters Roundtable?" And they said no. So the questions were just completely arbitrary. But I had two companies contact us and ask, you know, the difference between, you know, independent and commercial, and same stuff we were talking about. And, you know, the one company is a real company. They've got, you know, many employees, and they were mad. They were mad. And I said, yeah, you're a commercial show. You have to go on pro hosting. And like, well, we're just getting started, blah, blah, blah. I said, but you don't understand. You're still a commercial company. You're not an independent podcaster. So, you know, I'm sorry. But, you know, you're going to pay business rates for your podcast versus – you know, what is provided to the indie folks. So anyway, that was it was just kind of ironic that we had two of those come in. But yeah, it's and sometimes it's a gray line too.
Yeah, and it's and there may be a certain amount of expectation that comes from, you know, some of these media companies' experiences with YouTube. They think that they can just come in and because they have valuable content, that somehow that's going to drive value to, you know, Todd, your platform, and that somehow that exchange for bandwidth is a fair exchange. But it's not necessarily the case with podcasting. There, you know, a lot of these distribution platforms don't get a lot of value for the content. So there's not a real exchange there that is equal to maybe what they perceive as the value exchange for like a YouTube or something like that.
You know, sometimes there's a business to business type of value in a relationship. So if
that's true.
You know, if you have a show that comes over that's a commercial show and they're reaching, you know, who we think are going to be future podcasters, we'll say, hey, well, you know, we'll do some trading. And, you know, if you actively, you know, promote our services in the beginning of your show and, you know, I look at that on a case by case basis.
Yeah. I mean, if those content networks will look at you as almost like a, you know, that our platform is or your platform is like an advertiser with them, there might be something that can be done there. But I mean, unless it's a win-win relationship, you know, and if it's a larger, I mean, I had a similar call too, Todd, and I think maybe I mentioned on the last episode of the show, but that, you know, had a successful news platform and, but, you know, they were objecting to paying $4.99 a month for a plan, and it's and it's a little disheartening, you know, when when they tell you that they want to launch 6 to 8 podcasts on your platform, and they don't even want to pay $5 a month for that. It's you know, it does kind of make you wonder how much they value it too, you know.
Right. But you know, anyway, so you guys definitely tune into the Podcaster Roundtable. There was a full line of people there. There was, of course, Daniel J. Lewis from the Dassey Podcast. There was Dave Jackson from School of Podcasting. Of course, he's, you know, wears a Libsyn hat too. And so, you know, there was at least three of us there that had some alliance with marketing. But I'll tell you one thing, there was a little bit of a Facebook posting that I don't know if she meant it to really kind of go viral, but she had a comment about having a conversation with podcasters in relation to advertising deals and how those two conversations went. And I just kind of made an offhand joke. I said, Jessica, you and I could almost do a podcast together to talk about our experiences in working with podcasters when it comes to advertising. So it's something I want to talk a little bit today about, because we have a lot of podcasters listening, and I think many of them, you know, if they listen to the show, we've talked a lot about, you know, the advertising and dollars and how much is, but we really haven't talked about the conversation that you and I, Rob, you and I have with the actual podcasters when it comes to, you know, being considered for a deal or executing on one. And it's one that, you know, I've done several talks about this over the years about how that process works, but it might be worthy to spend some time today and just talk a little bit about, you know, that particular topic, because I think a lot of podcasters have some unrealistic expectations on what they should be getting for their shows. But before we do that, I did have one thing I wanted to talk about that I saw. Matter of fact, I saw some news earlier in the week, and it was about Stevie Ryan. Do you know about her?
Yes. Yeah, I do.
So, you know, sadly, she committed suicide. And it was, I don't know if it was before the last show or maybe while it was. I think the news popped while we were recording the last show last Saturday. And I immediately went into my database. I was like, is she hosting with us? And you know, I went to basically to look for her show, and she wasn't hosting with us, but she was a co-host of the Mentally Chill podcast. And it's what's sad here is that, you know, she's co-host with two other people. And, you know, I think we've already seen some of this happen in the podcasting space where we've had some podcasters pass away. But I don't think this – maybe this is the first time we've had someone with this level of stature from a celebrity standpoint or something like that has happened. I don't know if her co-hosts have done an episode since to talk about this or not. But
yeah, actually, Christian went in and did a follow-up episode after the fact to kind of talk about what the future of the podcast was going to be. I think there's only been one episode, and I think Christian's going to shut that podcast down, I think. Actually, I worked with her co-host at Podcast One.
Oh, really?
Christian also does a podcast called the Ask Women podcast with a woman that's been on this show before. Back when I was working for Podcast One, Marnie came on here from the Ask Women's podcast. She's the co-host with Christian, who is the co-host with Ryan, who committed suicide. Yeah.
So it's you know, so I'm there could probably be a whole series on that in itself, but did you listen to the episode, Rob, where she talked about that, or?
Yeah, I mean, I listened to a couple minutes of it. I didn't spend a whole time with it, but yeah, it's a tough deal, you know. I mean, you know, I think that whole show was really focused on depression and both of those women have some issues with that. And that's why they came together and did that show together, was to help them kind of deal with their depression as well as maybe help others. And the woman that is now, passed is, her grandfather actually died just prior to that. So it may have been just, the final straw,
added it kind of was a trigger, but. You know, I think, you know, from looking back at what happened when my dad died, and that's now been 10 years ago, 11 years ago, my mom and I did a podcast for a while, and it was called The Sherry Cast. And as a matter of fact, it's still online at sherrycast.com. And it was a series about, okay, so, you know, my mom's been widowed and I've lost a father. And so we went over that. It was kind of almost like we were almost doing therapy, you know. We were talking to each other and we were talking about stuff that was going on and stuff that she, you know, stuff that she was struggling with. Like, you know, she never had to mow the yard. So she didn't even know where the gas for the lawnmower was, you know, that kind of stuff. And so, you know, we had I can't remember how many episodes we did, but, we kind of got to a certain point with that, and we'd said what we needed to say and got it out of our system. But it's too bad that, you know, what has transpired has transpired. So, you know, it just goes to show folks that, you know, if you've got someone in the family that is, you know, dealing with issues, they've got some depression, you know, make sure you're staying engaged with them and get them help if they need help. You know, sometimes it's impossible, but sometimes it may be the difference between someone being with us or someone no longer being with us.
Yeah, it's a lot of people suffer from this, and it's and sometimes it's not because there's anything really wrong with those people. It's just a brain chemistry thing that they can't get over, and maybe they had a lot of trauma in their lives, and. I know that this is a topic that's very relevant to the comedian community too. You know, I think I remember watching that that movie. I think at a past event that was put together by the guys that do the LA Podfest, and that film was very much about comedians dealing with their emotional struggles in their lives and how that connected with audiences, because a lot of other people have common experiences, and they they treat these podcasts almost like a therapeutic kind of thing. You know, if the comedian is really authentic and really talking about their own personal problems and stuff that connects with others and helps other people deal with similar problems.
Yeah, because, you know, life, there's only so many variations of life. So there's a lot of parallels in people's, you know, what's going on. We all get up in the morning, put our, you know, shoes and socks on basically the same way. And, you know, so many of our lives are very parallel. So we're running against the same challenges and, you know, relationship issues and all that stuff. So I can see where, and especially when comedians are, you know, busting on themselves, that there definitely can be a connection point for sure.
Well, it's not necessarily that this is done
on purpose,
intentional, but
right.
But I think it happens naturally, and I think where the connection lines exist with podcasting is connecting with your audience at an emotional level, and mm-hmm. I think that's always the root of any show that has a big community around it, is that the hosts are able to inspire listeners to have an emotional connection. And I think that's a powerful part of this medium, and it can either be used for good or it can be manipulation. I think most podcasters look at it as a use for good. And if they build an audience around that, then so be it. It's helping others, and at least that should be the goal. I'm sure that there's people that might try and abuse this, but it's also can be a very powerful thing if it's authentic.
I had someone basically say, "How do I engage my audience?" And they were having challenges with engaging their audience, and so I just basically said, "Are you talking to them or are you talking at them?" Yeah. And there's a big difference in talking to them versus talking at them. So I think that you know, that kind of leads into that same,
yeah,
that same part. I don't think our embed updated on the newmediashow.com/live page.
Yeah.
I did a refresh.
Yeah, I sent you a new code.
Yeah. You sent me a new code. All right, I'll get that updated as I'm talking here. Another thing too, Rob, is that going back and talking just a little bit about podcaster interaction and when it comes to ad deals, you know, I think here's the really the synopsis and the brass tacks. If you're going to be wanting to have advertising in your podcast, number one, you have to be very responsive. You need to pay attention to your email, like read it daily. You know, and the email that you have on file with, whether it be Libsyn, Blueberry, PodTrack, or Spreaker, the email that you have file on with them is something that you check every day. Because when the deals come in, sometimes they move quickly, sometimes they move slow, but you don't want to be 3 days late to responding to, you know, basically where there's something that is pressing that we want to launch on. Another thing you have to be aware of is that oftentimes there's a back and forth. Now, for example, I've got a client right now. We're working on a deal for military shows, and they are very reluctant to tell me who the vendor is. And sometimes a media buyer won't do that. They'll say, "Well, this is who we're trying to reach," and they go through and then they look at the shows, and then, you know, I kind of find out near the end who the actual client is, and it becomes a little bit uncomfortable for me too, because sometimes I have to say, "Oh, nope, we're not going with that client," because maybe they've been hiding the client's name for a reason. Maybe they were trying to get us all up to the point of engaging, and then they drop in who the client is, and we say, "Oh, we've done this work already. Let's go ahead and roll with them," and where it may be a client that I would have turned down to begin with. So it's weird. Some media buyers are like that, and sometimes I think what they're doing too is they're playing the field. They're going out and they're getting shows from me. They're getting shows from all the other vendors and trying to put together a plan. So vendors will do that. They'll play one against another. So if you're going to be working on an ad deal where I come to you and say, "Okay, they're trying to reach these type of people. I don't have the vendor name yet. We'll get that to you for your final decision." You know, again, it's about responsiveness and being understanding and how the process works. But sometimes will know up front it's such and such company and it's going to be a direct response or it's going to be brand awareness. So from our perspective, we'll try to share as much as we can with you. But the key thing that I keep just telling people is also just, again, be responsive and watch your email. But there's another thing, too, is that if I come to you with a deal, I already know what the terms are going to be. I'm going to know if it's going to be a CPM deal. I know what the upper limit on that's going to be. I'll tell you if I don't know exactly, I'll tell you the range. And then, you know, I kind of get a verbal initial kind of like I'm interested type of commitment reply back from you so that we can at least get your name on a proposal in front of the client. I, you know, some companies like Rob, you at, when you were working at Podcast One, did you have to inform the host who the ad deal was, or did you just tell them? How did that work?
Most of them were told about the ad deals before they were run through. Yeah. Because a lot of them were doing host reads. So obviously they had to know in advance, and some of them were picky about their advertisers. Some of them wouldn't have certain advertisers on their show. So, right. But there was a lot of influence, as you might imagine, on running campaigns. So it was one of those things, mm-hmm. you know, if the host turned it down, there maybe was a little bit of friction between the hosts and the sales side, as you might imagine, because it's all, you know, to some degree, it's all about the revenue, right? So mm-hmm. if a host turns down too many campaigns, that cuts down on the revenue and, you know, makes a lower return on investment for all parties involved. So,
right.
Can make it a little bit of a challenge.
So, you know, I think the main thing is, you know, every company's going to be a little bit different in how they communicate and how they work, but also, if we've reached out to you and then all of a sudden you don't hear from us for a couple of weeks, don't be surprised, because sometimes they get these ad deals and they sit on them, and then it's about, you know, 2 months later, all of a sudden they'll email us, okay, we're ready to launch, and they want to launch tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, and it just, you're just like, oh man, please, you know, don't do this to me. But it happens more often than not. You're not often going to be able to dictate the terms of what the deal is. If they come to me and say, I want to be in, you know, on Tommy's show or Susie's show, then, you know, I'm going to be able to have a little more leverage. I'm going to say, okay, hey, what is your advertising rate, you know, for this particular vendor? And I'll go back and I'll say, hey, you can have Tommy's show for, you know, $32 CPM, and you can have Susie's for $29 or whatever it may be. And then the vendor can make a decision whether they want to be in that show or not. So, but sometimes I know what the fixed rate's going to be, because they've already said, you know, we're not paying any more than this.
Yeah.
So, and that's the case 9 out of 10 times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Campaigns, I think we're in a kind of a period of heightened kind of desire and activity around advertising in this medium. And I think at Podcast Movement, we're going to see a lot of discussion around things like dynamic ad insertion and host reads, and how some platforms are dynamically inserting host reads and some are doing radio style ad campaigns, and how there's this kind of mashup that's happening in the advertising space right now as people rush in to get revenue. And that really, I think some of the leading players in the space are thinking, if they're going to play in the dynamic ad insertion space, that they better use it with host reads, but they're going to have to be pre-recorded host reads. I know we've talked about this stuff many times, but it's definitely a hot topic, I believe, and coming into Podcast Movement, it's going to be talked about a lot, because there's going to be a lot of new people in this space that want to get involved and generate advertising dollars, probably much more than we've ever seen before.
You know, and we're fighting it right now, because what's going on is the bigger networks are driving CPMs down, and Jessica even alluded to this as well. The company came to her with a deal and they said $10 the CPM, And she's like, we don't do $10 CPMs. And I'm like, well, that's what such and such network gave us. Well, when a network is moving, you know, 20 million downloads a month, they can afford to do $10 CPM.
Yeah.
For them, it's, you know, that's an easy call. But when you're dealing with a, and again, their buyer doesn't have to get permission from their host. It's going to run in their campaign, and the hosts have nothing, absolutely no say over it. They get, it's in there, whether it be a Pampers commercial or a, you know, something for some online gaming site. It's, and I'm not saying that was the vendor, but they don't have a choice of what goes in their podcast. Whereas most of folks listening to this show right now, they are the radio station general manager and they are the talent. And if I come to them with a deal that's $10 CPM and they're going to like, forget that, I'm not doing that. And I don't blame them. Yeah. And but so these big networks are going to start driving down CPMs, and that doesn't bode well for the rest of the space.
No, are those that you're hearing about the most, are they in programmatic platforms, or are they doing it the old school way of selling it direct?
That deal, I don't know how it came into that network, but it was a host endorsed ad read at a $10 CPM level. And I'm just like, oh my God, you know, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
But that might become the new norm. We may not, you know, it's a race to the bottom.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they're desperate to put ad dollars in their people's pockets and they're taking stuff at 10, well, if they can sell all their inventory to them at 10 and get good tangible results, why would they spend 20 with me? You know, that's therein lies the problem.
Yeah. 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 And as more content comes on the space for the buyers to choose from that are doing well, you know, reasonably well on the downloads and the audience development, there's more for them to pick from. So it's a supply and demand situation too. I mean, oftentimes the only shows that drive really high CPMs these days are shows that are hosted by big celebrities that have other marketing prowess, you know, that right along with their ad campaign that can justify those higher CPMs. But you know, so I think it's unfortunately we're coming into a period where there's a supply and demand issue that's starting to take hold as well.
So we'll see. We'll see where we'll see where it leads. And those of you that are listening that are running networks, please, you know, don't take $10 CPMs.
Yeah,
your content's worth more than that.
Well, I guess it gets back to Todd at the end of the day. You know, what's the ROI on these things? What's the conversion rates? What's the content of the ads? You know, that's what's going to drive the value. And I think you know. Selling on price is easier than selling on value, and it's a tougher sell. But you know, but if you can prove that you turn a stronger ROI than a show that's selling for $10 and you're trying to pitch 20, you know that's probably your only competitive angle that you can take is you've got a more highly engaged audience that's going to convert on this at a higher rate and. But that's sometimes hard to prove, you know.
But a lot of the media buyers are getting over already because they know it's converting at a much higher level than anything else. So they're getting a bigger, you know, bang for their buck already to begin with.
But and they're still trying to drive the CPMs down at the same time.
Sure, because that drives performance. See, they get measured on performance of multi-campaign. So if they're using podcasting to prop up their other buys, which I know has happened before. I worked with an advertiser who bought podcasting specifically to prop up their banner ads and some print stuff that they were running, and it kept their client happy. The client all they cared about was counts at the end of the month. So, you know, they were using...
Gotcha.
Yeah.
But they wanted, I mean, if they can boost up all their media, like maybe they're doing radio and some television. If they can boost their overall performance on a particular synergistic campaign, then that totally makes sense, Todd.
Another thing, too, is, you know, yesterday I celebrated my 12th anniversary of having been sponsored continuously by GoDaddy for my personal show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I had a couple of questions asked from me, and I haven't, you know, I've always been kind of public about the, you know, the deal structure over there. And, you know, if I look at it from a longevity standpoint, what I've earned from that campaign over the years, it's an amount of money. But if you back it to the CPM, if I actually look at it from a CPM standpoint, I probably underperformed on a CPM basis. But I also know that, you know, in what I mean by that is I get a fixed amount, a set fixed amount monthly, guaranteed. And I personally, what I have to hit for conversions, I know how many that I have to hit. And then on a certain sale type, I get a bonus based upon the type of sale. And I can usually, I know where my numbers are going to be by about the 20th of the month. I kind of see where things are tracking. I know how we're going to do by the end of the month. And I'm very happy with the check that I get from them every month. Now, if I take that check amount and I divide that by, you know, 7 or 8 shows a month and, you know, go and multiply by the number of people that listen to my show and, you know, roll that back into an actual CPM level, my CPM level is lower than what I would normally sell a campaign for. But I also look at the relationship I've had with this company for 12 years, and that is in itself, if I know that they're going to be here month after month after month after month and I don't have to re-sign a contract and I know I'm going to get a certain amount of revenue from them as long as I perform, that's pretty hard to walk away from.
Yeah.
And to go back and say, well, I think we need to raise my base this amount, because then they're going to really start looking at it, scrutinize it a lot closer. But and then I have to make sure, number one, I hit those numbers that will meet that higher expectation every month. So I don't know, there's a trade-off. When you have a partner that's been for a long time, do you take the lower CPM, which, well, for me, it's an, kind of like an effective CPM, because I it's not truly being paid on a CPM basis, but if I back it out, I know where the CPM falls. You know, so that's the you know, it's something you have to look at when you're considering a deal, a long-term deal with a vendor.
Oh yeah, totally. Hey, I also saw that there was an article in the Neiman Labs. I don't know if you saw this article talking about here's what happens the last time audio producers got better data. I don't know if you saw this article or not.
I heard about it, but I don't think I read it. What was their synopsis, that we're going to get screwed?
Well, it's this whole connection that they were drawing between what happened with radio back when our radio got better ratings metrics and how it caused the industry to explode, you know, in revenue. And they're drawing this correlation to this recent Apple thing of getting better data, and that's going to cause an explosion in audio, you know,
kind of okay.
Trying to draw a connection between, you know, like the old, you know, people meters, you know, with Arbitron and how that transformed. And now we're getting better data out of the NPR1 app and all this stuff. And I tweeted back on this thing that, that this really isn't going to change very much. I think you're kind of overhyping the connection between what happened with radio. Radio's never really had very good data ever. So any kind of hype and or growth in sales because of ratings or whatever was kind of a little bit of smoke and mirrors. But you know, this data that we're getting out of Apple, people need to understand it's not complete set of data. I mean, it's not like we've got 100% view on this stuff. This is still going to be viewed, in my view, I look at it as equivalent to survey data. This is just going to be a sample, though it's going to be a better sample, clearly. But it's only going to be probably, Todd, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's only going to be like 60% of the data, right?
Well, and that's if. Now, here's the big, and this is the what we've been cautioning all our, you know, we've been getting calls from the, you know, the ESPNs, ABCs of the world, and they are asking, okay, what's this going to give us that we don't have already?
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been talking to them about that. And, but here's my worry. The question has still not been answered. What happens if the person that is using the device, using an iOS device, has their privacy settings turned on not to provide feedback or information to Apple?
Yeah.
Is Apple going to honor that privacy setting in iOS and not report that play data? I'm assuming we're thinking that that's going to be the case. So if that's the case, here's where they're, you want people's mind to explode. All right, so Todd knows, and Rob knows, and Rob Walsh knows, and PodTrack knows how many people have downloaded an episode on the iOS platform. Very easy. That's something that we break out. Very simple to see. This is not rocket scientists. We can see those numbers. So let's say that that number, let's just use that number, is 10,000. Now you get... Todd's number says 10,000, but Apple's numbers say 5,000 played that back.
Yeah.
Well, okay, they're going to say, Todd, how come 10,000 people have downloaded my show, only 5,000 played back? Well, I'm going to say, I don't know. But let's throw this question in. What happens if 3,500 of those 5,000 plays or 3,500 plays were not reported by Apple because of the privacy settings in the phone? So you had 8,500 download or 8,500 actual plays, only 5,000 reported, yet Todd's system shows 10,000. People are, their brains are going to melt.
It's going to cause more confusion than exists in the market today is what it really is. It sounds like.
I want people to be very cautious here on what they think they're going to get. Now, we've asked Apple. Apple hasn't said anything yet.
Yeah.
So if Apple comes back and okay, so what happens if Apple comes back and tells me, yes, we're going to be reporting the plays of those folks that have their privacy setting turned on not to report data back? What do you think people are going to do? Listeners are going to do. They're going to be like, what do you mean? Why? I've said no. Don't share. People are going to have a shit fit. So Apple hasn't said. So, okay. So if they're not saying, then does that mean they're including it? And they're just not saying they're going to include it?
I mean, it's possible that this whole thing was a little bit of an oversight on their part. And maybe they're having to regroup and rethink about the implication of that. Because that's going to be a number that's going to be a variable that nobody's going to be able to have access to.
Right. Because my phone, I have my privacy setting not to share. We will know, because what we will do is immediately when this thing comes out and it's available, I'll take five phones that have their privacy settings. We'll set up a special a special episode, and we'll hit it five times. You'll hit it intentionally five times, wait 24 hours, and go back and see if that data is in there.
Yeah.
You know, we'll know. But until this is out, you know, it's kind of funny. Someone was asking, well, they asked us for a access to one of our systems, and they gave us a test account on their system, and Angelo was doing some tests, and they said, "Oh, we don't show anything in the test results until the episodes had nothing in the stats till the show's had 100 downloads." And because of the way we were testing, Angelo said, "Okay," just wrote a script, and he downloaded the show 500 times, and he assigned different user agents to the download every time, and basically we did something that we would hope no podcaster would ever do. And sure enough, their system showed 500 downloads from the same IP. They had no filtering in there for multiple IP downloads. So, you know, it's and that team was probably like, oh, wow, we need to fix that. But a lot of these metric systems that are in a lot of these podcast platforms right now are not, they are over-reporting still.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I also, in this article too, and I posted a link to the article in the comments threads of this live show on Spreaker at SpreakerLiveShow.com. It also talks about, how we're going to be able to see if people are going to be skipping ads or not. I'm not sure that's going to be a big factor here. I don't know, Todd, what do you think about the whole concept of people, we're going to get visibility into people skipping through ads?
I don't know if we're going to get that deep.
Yeah.
We can tell on our system currently if someone actively is scrubbed ahead, we can see that segment of data is missing, but it's very subjective because it's based on a percentage. So you have to kind of do the math to figure out where – we'll see what what Apple provides. You might see if people skip ads. Based on my utilization and listening to podcasts, my phone is in my pocket when I'm listening to podcasts. And if an ad comes on, I don't reach into my pocket and, it takes me longer to fumble around with it to try to get it to bounce through an ad. I don't skip ads myself. It's just not part of the natural listening process.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And people, I guess maybe some people do, but if I really think about probably how Apple could display this stuff, I would think it'll show where they stop listening, not whether or not they hit the skip button or not.
That has huge value.
Yeah. I just can't see them getting to that level of detail. It just, maybe that's something that they'll do in the future, but I just don't see it as something that, that anybody should be concerned about.
Yeah. So, I don't know, I guess we'll see. We'll see what happens here with all this. But I
tell you, it's sure being trumped up as this whole new
grail.
Data is like it's going to revolutionize the podcasting space. And I guess all these people especially on the public radio side, are all like seeing the money. You know, I guess that's kind of what it comes down to for a lot of folks out there. I hate to say
it. Some people in the space may have some hard wake up calls if their metric numbers don't match up. You know, here's the thing. So, you know, everyone's got their little way of counting, right?
Yeah.
So, they say we're right. Our stuff is very accurate. And I'm not referring to public radio. I'm just using a general statement here.
Yeah.
So let's say all of a sudden that their downloads on iOS showed that they had 30,000 downloads. That when it comes back and they only have 5,000 plays. Well, what's that going to do?
Yeah.
You know, when their download system says, we have 30,000 downloads. That's how many, you know. And yet the actual plays was only 5,000 or 3,000. Or let's say, let's multiply. Divide 30,000 by 6. Yeah, about 5,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's gonna be very entertaining.
Yeah,
that's
these numbers can either look good for a show or they can help it look raise a lot of questions. And that's the good with the bad here. Right? But it seems like many in the space are really thinking this is going to be the cat's meow, as they say, or it's going to cause a hockey stick in revenue and it's just going to be revolutionary to the space.
If this is what it takes to get $1 billion into podcasting space, I'm going to dance the jig.
Yeah.
And we're all going to laugh all the way to the bank, and we're going to say, how stupid were these people to begin with. If that's what it takes to get $1 billion in this space, sign me up. Yeah. I'm in, you know. Yeah. And I'll sing the praises of this system if that's what it takes. But if this is the catalyst that they think is going to drive, I hope it does. But, you know, we should all be touting this is what it's going to do, right? Okay, so no media buyers are listening to this show. So podcasters, we all have to promote. This is going to be the holy grail of information. And that there is no medium in the space that is going to ever be measured any better than this. You can take this to the bank. This we all, hey, Rob, this is what we should be promoting. I'm serious.
It's exactly what's happening. It's just there's a lot of question marks.
Well, you and I have question marks, but media buyers are going to go gaga over this.
Are they really, or do they even care, Todd?
You know, that's what they say, right? This is what's been missing. So we will see. We will see. I mean, I hate being a curmudgeon. I sound like an old grumpy old man here. I really do. I hate to, you know, we hate to be the downers of this, but.
Well, we're also playing in reality. We're not playing around hype, I guess. Hype only gets you so far, and it can get you into trouble too. It can set expectations that are unrealistic. In business, you have to be real. I mean, to some degree, it's great to kind of play up the positive aspects of anything in business that will help grow revenue. But at the end of the day, if it's not sustainable because it's not built on foundational principles, it's a folly effort. It's not going to turn out.
I saw a spreadsheet that was posted in a couple of the forum communities, and it basically listed the top 200 hosts of the top 200 shows in iTunes. I was livid because they said, oh, Blueberry's got two. And I'm just like, you guys are a bunch of dumbasses. You do not know even what you're looking at. Number one, you didn't look. All you looked for was blueberry.com feeds. And anyone that works with us or has PowerPress knows that the majority of the feeds that our customers are using are their own. So I went down through and I read the list and said, oh, blueberry feed, blueberry feed, blueberry feed, blueberry feed, blueberry feed, blueberry feed. And then I went back to my database and I looked and I said, yep, hosting customer. Yep, hosting customer. Nope, not a hosting customer. Yep. So someone puts a spreadsheet out. And then someone puts it out as gospel, and it's not even right. It just fucking pisses me off that bad information continues to get shared with the community. And people think, oh, I trust this person, so the data's got to be good. Well, the data was shit. Yeah. So, you know, at least our portion was.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a complicated game, this podcasting space. It's a lot more complicated than people realize. You know, there's
people post stuff, and someone says, "Why are you such a downer?" Well, people, if I'm a downer when people put out bad information and uneducated information.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it takes a lot of work to get really accurate information. I guess that's the bottom line to all this stuff: is that it's not as easy as people think it is.
It's not black and white.
No.
And I didn't claim to have 40 in the top 200, but I got a hell of a lot more than two.
Yeah. And there's a lot of top shows that don't even show up in that list
because of
how it's how the algorithm is managed by Apple. You know, it's only what's popular in the last, you know, week or so.
Yeah, I got a couple of shows that are moving a huge amount of traffic, and you look in the list and you're like, where are they? You know? So my show does pretty good, and I've never been in a top 200 list. If, you know, maybe I am, I don't know. I don't look. So it's funny.
Yeah. It's not that important to you. And I get it. Yeah.
Anyway, we're here and just so I'm a common folk podcasters.
Common folk.
So we are, you know, our business is taking care of independent you know, sure, we love the big shows too, but, you know, let's be honest with you. It's, you know, our bread and butter is the independent content creators that are out there that are struggling to do their content. And, yeah, you know, we live that every day. And
yeah, you know, I'm in the same situation, you know.
The big shows don't need any help. You know, they don't need my help. It's the small podcasters that need my help.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So, and that's where the vast majority of the market is anyway.
Right, 99%.
Yep. So
actually, probably more than that.
Yeah, and those that cater to that end of the market have a different responsibility than those that cater to the high end of the market. You know, like Art 19 or somebody like that has a different approach to the market than we do. You know, those guys are secretive and they like to play their own little internal games and in this space and not really participate in the community that much. And we're just the opposite. We're trying to be transparent, open, work with the community, give people what they want, and make it open to everyone, not a closed select group of people. You know, there's a place for that, and I don't really begrudge that side of the industry. I think it's catering to a area of the industry that's needed, but it's, you know, the side of the industry that we cater to is a much bigger piece.
And for those of you that are small independent podcasters, we love you. You know, that's the main thing. And the rest of these big guys, they can do what they want.
Yeah.
You know, that's the main thing here. So I know where my bread is buttered, and that's the most important thing.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, and I know where my peanut butter is put, so.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, so anything else on your mind this week, Todd, about the space?
Well, I was just looking at any news that had popped on pod2pod.com. Of course, if you guys are not in the Slack channel of pod2pod, that's always fun to see the people popping in there. So, you know, make sure you get in the pod2pod Slack channel.
Yeah, I don't think that there's been too many updates to the pod2pod in the last week. I think that team over there has been taking some time off, I think.
So, yeah, because the last article on the front page is June 30th. Yeah, so definitely not too much there. Let's look at Podcaster News. And let's hear what else. PodQuest seeks the next podcast superstar. I don't even know who PodQuest is. The winners of the previous contest, podcasters can now enter this year's contest. Phobies Parson. Anyway, so they've got a new contest going on. And then the Scottish Audio Cooperative is an audio production and training organization based in Ayr, Scotland. My sister's getting ready to leave for England and going to be in Scotland in a couple of weeks with her daughter. They're doing a Harry Potter thing in Europe. So, yeah, my niece is a big Harry Potter fan. What else here? Yeah, it's... Oh, you guys introduced something, Rob. You introduced follower tracking? What's that all about?
Oh, yeah, it's just another piece in our stats area that that helps our podcasters see, you know, who's following them and what those trends are. Because we've built kind of like a little social network as part of the Spreaker platform. So you can follow users and shows on the platform, and it just tracks that up and down flow. So when you actually go live, and I'll just share, you know, each time I go live with this show, it actually sends an email out to all of my 6,200 followers that are part of this show that are just on the Spreaker platform. So that's what that's about. It's like a bar chart kind of thing that's in the admin tools that shows the up and downs, and you know, if you do a campaign or something like that, like a social media campaign. It drives a bunch of followers to your show and that kind of stuff. It'll track it in the system, and it kind of treats it like downloads, essentially.
I know that I have a both Geek News Central and New Media Show are listed on Spreaker as a syndication. The listing gets picked up. And I'll see when someone follows. I get an email when someone's followed the, or made a comment. So, yeah, you guys have a pretty good notification program over there. So,
yeah, that's the idea anyway. And we're doing that more in our apps too. So we're helping people get notified on their mobile devices when a new episode's available and things like that.
All right. Hey, for those of you that are in the Ohio region, I'll be in our Columbus office Wednesday and Thursday. Friday, we're doing a team thing, but if you're in the Columbus area Wednesday or Thursday, feel free to stop in and see me and chat at our office. Just drop me an email and I'll give you the address and the suite we're in. So if you want to come over and hang out. So, yeah, so I'm here in Michigan with my mom and sister for a few days, and then I go to drive into Columbus Wednesday morning. So
awesome. Yeah. About a week and a half or so, I'm going to be back in Minneapolis at the Conclave Conference. I'm doing a podcasting panel back there with, I think maybe I mentioned it last week, maybe, but it's called The Conclave. If you go to theconclave.com. So there's a podcasting panel that's going on back there. Seth from Jacobs Media is going to be there moderating it. And we're going to talk about how kind of small to middle-sized radio stations and in radio markets can take advantage of podcasting. So that's the idea.
I don't know if we talked about it last week. Did we talk about Spotify opening their podcast submission form? Did we talk about that at all?
I don't remember if we did or not. Maybe, but I'm not sure. We can talk about it really quick if we want to. Right?
Yeah. So basically, Spotify has been pretty closed. They've been very hard to get listed.
They still are, actually.
Yeah, they still are. So, but there's now an online submission form. And I think my main advice is, and maybe I talked about this last week, is wait to have some shows underneath your belt before you submit. If you're a brand new show, don't submit immediately. You might want to wait to get 10 shows, 90 days or something like that underneath your belt before you submit it, because it's like, one and out. So you've got a one-time shot to be looked at over there. So, give yourself the best chance of being in. They're still being really picky, and I've not heard anyone that's gotten approved off this online submission form yet. So we'll see what happens here with that.
Yeah, I would give the same advice. I mean, you only really have one shot with those guys. And I would imagine that they're pretty slow, too. And one of the reasons that they're doing this, from what I've gathered in my conversation with them, Todd, and you can probably confirm this as well, is they're trying to create curated lists of shows. And so they're looking for shows to build out curated lists. It's not like they're building a big directory or catalog of content. They're picking up shows that are very specific to their goals around content curation.
So that's going to be very limited numbers.
Yes, correct. So they're going to be picky.
Well, it's a interesting strategy, and not one that endears them to the heart of podcasters, that's for sure. Maybe endears them to the ones that...
It's certainly not going to get a lot of podcasters to say in their programs, go to Spotify and listen to my podcast. It isn't going to create that viral marketing that I think in some ways would really help Spotify. But they're not playing that game. So
one thing about the podcast awards, we've obviously nominations been open since July 1st, and we've had some additional shows come in and register to participate. And we've met all of our fundraising goals for this year. We've had enough people that have come in and sponsored, and basically the registration money that we raised that we're going to, you know, everyone is guaranteed a trophy this year, and we've been able to pay the bills, and we're going to even probably going to be able to do a little more dev in the follow-on year. So I'm pretty excited where we're at this year with the awards, and so that process continues, and the nominations will be open through the end of the month. And you can still register and participate if you're if you think you're late. You're really not. You still got 21 days or so to engage your audience if you decide you want to participate. So it's, you know, I had one guy tell me he is going to wait until the 15th of July, and then he's going to cut his audience loose on the nomination form. I thought, well, that's an interesting strategy. I think I would have started as soon as possible, but that's a strategy that at least one podcaster I know is going to utilize. So...
Yeah, well, it'll be exciting. So I think your awards nominate or your awards presentation is going to be sometime in September, I'm assuming, with the International Podcast Day. Yeah,
it will be essentially this year we will have no shows, because if the winner doesn't submit his acceptance speech, the award will be given to the runner-up. So this, you know, basically if whoever each of the 10 shows that make the slate are going to be required to submit their acceptance video, and that way we can keep it a secret to the end who actually won, and then they'll know when the you know, when their piece is played. But we're not going to have this situation where ABC show has won, go ahead and dial into Skype, and then they don't show, and then it looks stupid. So if ABC show doesn't submit their, and we've laid that out in the rules very clearly, so you don't submit your acceptance speech, you forfeit. So we should have 100% participation, we would hope.
It's too bad that you had to go to that degree with stuff, but I can totally see you. Why you had to.
it's either tell them in advance that they've won,
yeah,
and get the video, and then everyone knows that they didn't win,
yeah,
right? So, yeah, you know, it's not like we're sitting in an auditorium where they're there in their tuxedo. That you know, we're not at that level.
Yeah.
So maybe someday, I don't know.
Though that was tried once with it, right?
Yeah, and... You know, we've had awards in the past at events, you know, and they've went off okay, but you know, never at the production level that you this thing deserves. So that's where we're at.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's what's going on with the podcast awards.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I think we're still a little bit in the post 4th of July vacation time window. I think this next week, I think everybody's going to be back to work and things will be charging forward again.
Yeah. I saw some people that were upset. I should have published a show over the holidays. I was getting some feedback from my audience. Where's the podcast? And I tell people, don't stop doing the show because it's a holiday. That's when everyone's going to be listening.
Yeah. Yeah. I did a show this week. I haven't stopped any of my podcasts.
No.
So just keep charging forward. It'll put you in a much stronger position coming out of the holiday too.
Yep, that's a fact. Well, Rob, I think we're about POW here, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. I think we can probably wrap it up a little earlier than we normally do.
Anyway, I think that I should, and for a programming note, I will be flying on Saturday next week again, so we'll have to do the show again on Sunday if that's okay.
Okay. Yeah, I think we can work that one out.
So. Yeah, I'll be back in the studio again. So, but what day do you leave for Minneapolis?
Oh, not towards the end of the month here. So,
oh, okay,
yeah,
okay.
I think I leave on the 22nd, I believe. Yeah.
All right.
So, I guess that would be the following Saturday after this next one.
Right, then.
Yeah. So.
All right, we'll play it by ear then. So, but everyone, thanks for hanging out with us. And I was going to look here in the comments. I think we had some comments come in. Oh, you just posted the links in the Speaker Lives. Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting too many listeners today.
Yeah. So, but we'll get, actually this show will be up almost immediately when it's done, but I'll get the MP3 posted today. But everyone, thanks for being here. You can reach me at todd@blueberry.com or at Geek News on Twitter. Rob?
I can be reached on Twitter at Rob Greenlee, and you can certainly send me an email, rob@spreaker.com, and I'm at spreakerliveshow.com, and that's probably the best place. And I do have a website, robgreenlee.com, too. Want to check that out? But it's great to have you listening this week with us, and certainly we'll be back next Sunday, won't we?
Yeah, we'll be back next Sunday. So everyone, thanks for being here, and we'll see you next time on the New Media Show.
Okay, it's done.